The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words. And those taking part are Anne Scott James, Dennis Norden, Dillis Powell, and Frank Muir. Round one tries to test their respective vocabularies. For 2 marks, can you give me the meaning of the following words? Beginning with Anne Scott James. Anne, I'd like to know the meaning of repousse. R-E-P-O-U-S-S-E with an accent. Repousse.
Well, pousser means to push. It's a thing they have in French doors, isn't it?
It depends which side of the door.
Push, pousser and tirer. Repousser, it's something which is pushed. I think it's an artistic word, actually.
It is?
It's a sort of craft, which means the hammered metal.
Which side do you start from?
The back side.
That's right. That's right. 2 marks. It's ornamental metalwork hammered into relief from the reverse side. It means to push from behind, and was originally just an adjective. Frank Muir, the meaning, please, of firkin. F-I-R-K-I-N.
Oh, a pleasant word. Firkin. It used to be applied to a man's hairy children. But it's now more commonly used, Jack, as a measure of beer.
How
if
big?
You say, I don't give 2 pins for that.
Yes.
That's what a firkin is.
I want it a little more accurate.
Well, a pin is the smallest barrel,
yes,
you can get of beer. And a firkin is the equivalent of 2 pins.
I think that's good enough, Frank. That's all right. It's a small cask to hold liquids. It used to hold butter and fish at one time as well.
Not the same time.
Not the same time, no. It's a quarter of a barrel, that's what I was trying to get from you. It's half a kilderkin, and a kilderkin held 16 to 18 gallons, so this is 8 to 9 gallons. And you can describe a little tubby person as being a firkin. Too much. Dennis Power, what does a daguerreotype mean?
It's the forerunner of the photograph.
Mm-hmm.
It was a form of drawings, producing a likeness, not by outlining.
It was a photograph.
Yes.
On a wet metal plate.
Was it?
By Monsieur de Daguerre.
Yes.
It took about 20 minutes.
You stood there and you had a shadow.
So the sitters had to put their head into a sort of pitchfork thing.
Oh, Frank, you are interesting.
Known as being... known as being daguerreotted. They still exist, actually.
They do, yes. But it's I think that's good enough. I mean, after all that flim-flam...
French photographer.
Yes, Daguerre.
1840.
Jolly good shot. 39. It was a portrait taken by this very early photographic process. The impression was taken on a silver plate, sensitized by iodine, which seems to be very odd, and then developed by vapor of mercury, whatever that may mean. And it comes from this chap Daguerre. 2 marks. Good. Dennis Norden, of what does the practice of bottomry consist?
No, I'm not going to be drawn into kind of. We once had an idea of writing a nude pop music version of Midsummer Night's Dream and calling it Rock Bottom. But bottomry, I think, is a term used in marine insurance.
Absolutely right. Well, well done.
And it's in Merchant of Venice.
Well done, Dennis. It's the system of lending money to a ship owner for the purpose of his voyage on the security of the ship itself. So if the chap who lent the money finds that the ship sinks, he gets no money at all. If it doesn't sink, then he gets both the principal and some interest. 2 marks. Well, before we begin round 2, I read out a quotation for each team to write down. And I want the two women members to go on studying the quotations, because at the end of the program, I shall ask them where the quotations come from. Anne Scott James and Dennis Norden, your quotation is, "There is a destiny that shapes our ends, rough-hew them how we will." And Dillis Powell and Frank Muir, yours is, "Don't cross your bridges till you come to them." And then on the last round of the program, I shall ask Dennis and Frank to give me their idea of how these came to be said or written. Next round is about the author of the week. And what I want is to have the author identified, and I shall then ask some questions about the author and works. 2 marks for each correct answer, and here are quotations to help. "What men call gallantry and God's adultery is much more common where the climate's sultry." Or again, "Sweet is revenge, especially to women."
Ah, that is that witty poet, Lord Byron.
And in which of his works do you think you might find it, Anne?
I should think in Don Juan.
Well done, absolutely right. 2 marks straight away. This is George Gordon Byron, Lord Byron, and the quotations both come from Canto I of Don Juan, which is about a charming and handsome and unprincipled young man who delights in succumbing to the beautiful women whom he meets. Now, Frank Muir, "There was a sound of revelry by night, and Belgium's capital had gathered then her beauty and her chivalry, and bright lamps shone o'er fair women and brave men." Which is the poem, and what happened next day?
It's... I should think a bit of... Yes, it must be Childe Harold.
Yes, good.
Childe Harold's Pilgrimage, in fact. And it's the eve of the Battle of Waterloo.
That's right.
So what happened next day?
Two marks, Frank, before you change district.
Canto, well, I can tell you the canto. Cantos 1 and 2 were published in 1812, and as the Battle of Waterloo hadn't happened then, chances are it wasn't in one of those two. Canto 4 is about Byron and not Harold. So it's Canto 3, which would be about 1816, 1818.
Yes, jolly good. Absolutely right. You've got the whole thing right. Tis Childe Harold, tis Byron.
No bonus.
We'll stretch a point and give you 2.5.
Thank you, audience. Breaking his stony heart.
Now, Dennis Powell, what did Byron do when, on his travels, he reached the Hellespont?
He swam across it.
Absolutely right. 2 marks. He stripped first, I think.
Oh.
Swam across it. He afterwards recorded his achievement in that same... In the poem we mentioned first, Don Juan. He could perhaps have passed the Hellespont as once, a feat on which ourselves we prided, Leander, Mr. Eakenhead, and I did.
Yes.
So we know at least 3 chaps who swam without drowning. Well, Leander drowned in the end. And Dennis Norden, how and where did Byron die?
Can I go for 2.5
yes,
on this?
Yes.
Byron died at the age of 36. He was in Italy working for the Italian liberation movement. When he got interested in the Greek independence movement, he sent money for it, and he sort of formed a sort of group of men to support it. He went over there and he contracted something like malaria, and he died at a place called Missolonghi, which I will say but refuse to spell, and his heart is buried there. His body was brought back to England, but they didn't let it rest in the Abbey.
2.5 straight away. Well, now a round of words of movement, or words that imply movement, and again, 2 marks for correct answers. Anne Scott James, what is meant by croquet? And I don't mean the noun, I want the verb.
To croquet?
Mm-hmm.
Well, to croquet is a thing which you do when you get on a lawn with 3 other people, all of whom are your best friends, and after about 10 minutes you feel a fiendish enmity, and you hit the opponent's ball, and you then join your ball onto it and slam him into the ditch, putting yourself neatly through the hoop.
Right, absolutely right. Yes, this is a very vindictive part of the game of croquet, And you have to bring your ball up against your opponent's ball, and you put your foot on your ball.
Are you allowed to put your foot
on? Oh, no.
You used to.
I don't think...
Don't think you are now.
Oh, no.
No. When I first played as a boy, you put your foot pretty hard on it.
Can you score, no. Jack?
You get your name taken and put the foot...
Anyway, two marks. Now, Frank Muir, what is a Roman candle or Roman candling? And I don't mean fireworks or what you find in churches.
It's a very nasty thing indeed. It's a parachuting term.
Yes.
And when I did a first jump at Ringway in Manchester, the fatalities, which is a Roman candle, when they don't, when the parachute doesn't open, was about one in 20,000. And after 3 years, it was about 1 in 250,000. So terrific advances were made in it. But it's when the parachute, through reasons which have never really been quite discovered, just don't open, and they plummet down.
Thank you very much. Absolutely right. It streams out behind you in a long, thin line. I think that's why it's called the Roman candle. Two marks. Dennis Power, what is fool's mate? Fool's mate.
Fool's mate?
Mm-hmm.
Something to do with chess?
Yeah.
It's when you haven't checkmated.
No. Have
you? It's when the check bounces.
I'm going to give you 1 out of 2. It is in chess, and that's the one mark. But the first player makes a peculiarly stupid move, which is what I always used to do, and is then checkmated by his opponent's second move. So the game stops at that point.
And you move backwards off the board.
That's diving. Dennis Norton, what's meant by selling the dummy?
In rugby and occasionally in soccer, it's a ploy when you pretend to pass the ball, which makes your opponent move sideways, but you actually go straight on with it.
Absolutely right, yeah. Deceive several opponents, probably, or one, by pretending to pass the ball to one of your team colleagues and then going on yourself. There are elaborations like double dummy and false dummy, but let's keep it simple. Two marks. Well, now we come to the last round and go back to those quotations I gave the teams earlier in the programme. For 2 marks, and Scott James, can you give me the origin of your quotation? There is a destiny that shapes our ends, rough hew them how we can, how we will.
Well, I think the origin is Hamlet by William Shakespeare.
Do you remember who said so?
Hamlet, I would have thought.
Yes, absolutely right. 2 marks it is. It's Hamlet speaking to Horatio at the beginning of Act 5. Our indiscretions sometimes serve us well when our deep plots do fail, and that should teach us there's a destiny that shapes our ends, rough hew them how we will. Now, Dennis Powell, the origin of yours, please. Don't cross your bridges till you come to them.
Well, I've been thinking about it, as you tell me to, and I've come to the conclusion it's a proverb.
You're absolutely dead right. You get your 2 marks. Well, now I'm going to ask Dennis and Frank to give me their explanation of how these quotations came into being. And for this round only, the marks will go to whichever improbable story receives the longer applause from the audience here in the theatre. So back to Dennis Norton and his one. There is a destiny that shapes our ends, rough hew them how we will.
Look. Look, I said to this psychiatrist. Look, I said, don't tell me I've got a persecution complex, because I have not got a persecution complex. In that case, he said, what do you think is the matter with you? I am actually being persecuted. I said, oh, come now. He said, come, come. Look, he said, why don't we go inside and talk? I am not leaving this ledge. I said, I am not leaving this ledge till I have blown the gaff about the conspiracy which the whole modern world has entered into to drive any normal person clean out through his own skull. In what way, he said? Tell me in what way. Or at least put me down. All right. All right, I said. I will tell you in what way. For example, why is it they build theatres so that every time you go to see a show, if you decide to put your overcoat in the cloakroom, there's always an empty seat right next to you. And how many times does this happen? The phone rings and you pick it up, and when you say, yes, hello, in a deep masculine voice, the person at the other end says, Ethel? Do you want any more examples? I said. Do you know what happened when I drove into a garage recently? They gave me a pair of nylon tights. A pair of nylon tights, three glass tumblers, an ice cream, and a set of footballers' photographs. And this was a garage. It wasn't till I'd gone 3 miles I found out they'd neglected to put in petrol. Look, he said, they've got that nice big net down there already. Don't tell me that sort of thing doesn't affect people, I said. You know what I did this afternoon? I said thank you to an automatic lift. I got out at my floor, turned round to the lift and said thank you to a row of buttons. And last night, there was I, a grown man, sitting in front of my television set, crying, moved beyond words, tears coursing down my cheeks, and saying to myself, you fool, it's only a commercial. He comes back to her when she's cleaned her teeth. Do you really think, the psychiatrist said, do you really think you are different from everybody else? I must be, I said. If I can no longer buy a shirt in this whole big city, there is nowhere I can buy a shirt, it can only mean one thing. I am the only man left in London who isn't tapered. And answer me this. Why has the postman never, not once ever, brought me any of that unsolicited pornographic literature? That was when he pushed me. And as I journeyed downwards, it was then that I realized that that old quotation of Shakespeare really described exactly the malevolence of the modern world and what it does to a man. The only mistake he made was he put the comma in the wrong place. How it should read today is, there is a destiny that shapes our ends rough. Hew them how we will.
Well, I still think that psychiatrist had a rather awkward patient. And we go on to Frank Muir, and if you remember, his quotation was, don't cross your bridges till you come to them.
Very good motto. Because in my experience, behind all the miseries, there can lurk a little bit of pleasure, an exciting good thing. It's like this holiday I've just come back from in Corsica, and this terrible beach we were on. I thought it was terrible, but no. Oh, it was frightful, though. It really was. My wife said it was her fault, really. She said, look, silver sand, a gentle zephyr, there was a heat wave on, can't be wrong. The trouble is with silver sand, it's very fine. And it gets everywhere. I had a little aerosol of suntan oil. I pushed the trigger down, and it squeaked down. Sand got round the edge, fine silver sand, and the button didn't come up again. Do you know how much oil there is in a... in an area so cold and constant. I didn't know what to do with the thing. I was spraying oil up in the air. I ran into the sea with it, ruining somebody's copy of Nice Matin and a lady's hat. And I was holding it under, and it was welling up, and the cries of pollution rushed back. And I finally thrust it in my wife's handbag. The gentle Zephyr, umbrella, put an umbrella up, parasol, you know, shoved it in the silver sand, got it down 9 inches, bang, solid rock. Solid, wouldn't support a parasol. Then, what do? Heat wave, 100 degrees, lying back there, get a disparity in my swimming trunks. A disparity can be terribly, terribly painful. It's, you know, you 3 days, take it easy, nice gentle tan building up, you see. What happens? Lie out there, lie back, sun, lovely, straight from the swim, swimming trunks shrink. Just a little, and at the top of the thighs, an eighth of an inch of disparity grows. Grey-white flesh, which gets the full impact of the sun. The rest of the legs are brown, they're protected. But just that full length. At night, lie back in the bed, fluorescent it is. Eighth of an inch wheels of fluorescent pulsating pain. It's like going to sleep with two hot wires around your upper thighs. The following morning, sunbathe, no parasol, lie out, costume shrinks. Another disparity. And the first one then peels. By the ninth day, the disparity has then become painful, but that's another story. So, my wife said, well, don't be a fool. Change. I said, on the beach. She said, yes, well, get out of your costume when you come out of the water and put your pants and your shorts back on again. I put my towel round me and tightened it carefully and found I was staring at a French lady breastfeeding her child. I knew she was French because the child had golden ringlets down to his shoulders and football boots on. So I turned round the other way and I started manoeuvring, one hand holding the towel and the other sort of groping myself southerly. It was after about 18 minutes when I had difficulty. I lay down for a while and sobbed in the sand. There seemed at the time nothing else to do. I sort of scrabbled at the sand with my fingers, rather like a King Lear. If you can imagine a King Lear with his shorts on back to front. And it was then that my right hand, as it scrabbled in the sand, met something hard. And I picked it up, and it was an old 10-centime piece. I thought, hello? So I really started to work. By midnight, when my wife had sent her in to buy a torch, I really struck riches, and I found a little coarse purse full of foreign coins. Actually, Dillis, who knows foreign currency, tells me that they all come to 1 and 9. But it'll be a help. It'll set us on our way in Lithuania, you see. So take my advice, and if you go to foreign shores and the beach doesn't look nice, don't judge it on just superficial appearances. Something nice might happen. You might find something there, as I did. Or, to quote the old proverb, don't curse your beaches before you comb through them.
By your vote, ladies and gentlemen, Frank Muir wins the story, but nevertheless, the other team, Anne Scott James and Dennis Norden, win the entire contest, and that brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland, who also compiled the questions. The program was devised by Tony Schreien and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.